You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. Episode, we'll be talking about the Afghan Whigs Gentlemen. On the line, I have Ben.
Gentleman.
Kyle.
I'm really slobbering now.
And Matt.
I'm present, and I'm so excited to talk about one of my all-time favorite albums.
Gentlemen is the fourth studio album by the American alternative rock band, the Afghan Whigs. It was released on October 5th, 1993 on Elektra Records. It was produced by Greg Dooley, and the genre is alternative rock, post-punk, hard rock, R&B, soul, and grunge. I'm going to read from AllMusic Review, Ned Raggett. The Afghan Whigs sound was growing larger by the release during the days on Sub Pop, so the fact that Gentlemen turned out the way that it did wasn't all that surprising. As a result, cinematic was certainly the word that the band was aiming for, with the credits describing the recording process as being shot on location at Ardent Studios. While Gentlemen is no monolith, it is very much of a piece at the start. While If I Were Going opens things on a slightly moodier tip, it's the crunch of Gentlemen, Be Sweet, and Debonair that really stands out, each of which features a tightly wound R&B punch that rocks out as much as it grooves, if not more so. Greg Dooley's lyrics immediately set about the task of emotional self-evisceration at the time, with lines like, "Ladies, let me tell you about myself, I got a dick for a brain," being among the calmer points. The album truly comes into its own with When We Two Parted, though as sad countryish guitars chime over a slow crawling rhythm and Dooley's quiet then anguished detailing of an exploding relationship. From there in, things surge from strength to greater strength, sometimes due to the subtlest of touches, the string arrangements on Fountain and Fairfax, or the unexpected resigned lead vocal from Skrull's Marcy Mays on My Curse, for instance. Other times, it's all the much more upfront, as What Jail Is Like, with its heartbroken, fierce combination of piano feedback and drive building to an explosive chorus. Dooley's blend of masculine swagger may be a crutch, but when everything connects, as it does more often than not on Gentlemen, both he and his band are unstoppable. All right, what do we think of the Afghan Whigs, Gentlemen?
Masterpiece.
Yeah, wow. I think that the
masterpiece.
I think the entry in the book is incorrect in the fact that it is a monolith. It is an unstoppable, perfect piece of art. It is.
It is the monolith. We just dug this shit out of the moon.
Yeah,
and it's beckoning everybody to go into space. This record fucked me up. I remember seeing this record on like all of my cool friends' like record shelves, and having never heard it. I listened to the Afghan Whigs like at some point in my late teens, and I was like, "All right, you know."
Dude, Kyle, same.
Yeah, that cover with the little boy looking at the little girl in the bed. I was like, "What is this? I'm not listening to that." Get out of here.
Yeah.
This record's incredible. This record ripped my soul out. This record is a dark, sexy nightmare. Wait, guys. I wrote this down. Fountain and Fairfax. I wrote, this hit me like a doctor slapping a newborn baby's little butt.
Go ahead.
Night of the Soul shit. This record's incredible.
Well, he was, you know, he's been interviewed and they did a 33 and a third about this album, which just shows like how important and iconic it is that it was selected for that series. That Dooley was particularly trying to explore and go as dark as he possibly could into the male psyche, which he continued to do through like the rest of his career to a certain extent, maybe not quite this dark, but I think it is having that vision of seeing how far he can push it, which is what makes this album so good. I mean, musically, it's also just, they're at the top of their game. Like, I'm a huge Afghan Whigs fan, and the rest of the records are great too, but there's just, this is the proverbial lightning in a bottle. Like, just everything coming together exactly right. And yeah, but the thing is, like, I think it's interesting is people think this is like autobiographical of one of his relationships, but he wrote it based on a character in a film.
Sure,
that was like the main inspiration.
Matt, let me ask you a personal question. How much did this material factor into Sam Larry?
I don't think so. I don't think so directly lyrically, maybe a little bit without thinking about it. But I will say that I did directly reference the album cover of this album with my album cover for With Without. Me and Katya Murray are basically on the bed in a hotel recreating the shot, but as adults.
Oh, and you're both
little
babies.
That was a direct reference. No, we're all grown up.
You did that when you were little babies.
We were little babies compared to now. Yes, of course. But so I don't know. I don't think musically it influenced it a lot, but I think it definitely, yeah, it's interesting you ask that because I never would have cited this as an influence for Sam Lowry, but I think it probably definitely was in the mix for sure.
Oh, after re-listening to it years later, I was like, oh, I think I understand Matt's music a little more.
Here we go.
Well, I'm learning a lot about myself tonight. Okay, good.
No, and I was going to say, honestly, up until this week, my only exposure to this album was Matt being your roommate and also riding in a van with you for Sam Lowry stuff. Mm-hmm. That was how I knew Gentlemen. So I'd never actually sat down with headphones and spent the time to like absorb it until this week. And I keep on saying this. I wish I had done it sooner. Yeah, this is a great record.
Yeah. Same with me. I listened to it and I think it didn't sink in. Like, there's no hooks. It kind of has, you know, it has a little bit more mature writing. I don't think I really understood his vocals either until it was the same way with Dinosaur Jr., which I see him having a similar sort of cadence with his singing style. It's sort of lethargic and pulled out, you know, how he sings. I like that stuff now, and I can get past my, you know, not having the hooks and digging a little bit deeper now, you know. And I think that's something that just happens. It's either that or you get the album and you listen to it over and over until you get it. We have albums like that where when you're younger, it's like if you only have 10 albums, you're going to dig as deep as you possibly can on those albums. But this is...
I just want to throw this name out. Jeremy Enoch.
Mm-hmm. Enoch, yeah.
I remember like people playing the Afghan Whigs and also people playing Sunny Day Real Estate and listening to Jeremy Enoch's solo album. And I was like, maybe.
And I think that might be the problem too, is that they are related to maybe a lot of bands that we wouldn't find we wouldn't really get into, we wouldn't like. So it's one of those things that, you know, when there's something kind of unique or interesting about one band and then other bands kind of take it in a different direction that you don't find as gratifying as worthy.
I will say this, as you comment on Greg's vocals, I think Dooley was once described to me, I think by Adam Turla, actually. He described him as he's like a great bad singer.
Yeah.
Like, he's not what we think of as a traditionally a great singer. Everything. Like, but like what he does with it, you know, it's like Tom Waits. Like what he does with it is so, so good and so special. This album has never left my rotation since it came out. I don't listen to it every single day, but man, when I tell you that this is one of my all time favorite albums, it's one of my all time favorite albums. And it's just, it was such a joy to have to listen to it with purpose. Mm-hmm. for this episode and really think about it and think about, like, you know, and I knew that they were pulling from sort of like soul influences musically, but also then making it dark and weird and stuff. And like when you take like this song particularly right now that's playing right now, is this Debonair the song right
yeah.
now?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
The opening guitar riff, when it starts, like that could be a funk guitar riff, but then that minor bass line that weaves through it, it's like, oh, this is dark and it doesn't feel good. Like in a great way. It doesn't feel good. It's like ominous.
Dude, like that
Debonair,
the moment this album had its hooks in me was when the bass line dropped on Debonair.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, you have my attention.
Yeah, it's they.
Yeah, and Debonair's were like Greg Dooley tried to marry "I Want You Back" with a theme from Twin Peaks.
Yeah, basically.
And, you can hear like "I Want You Back," you know, but yeah. Like listen a little closer, you hear that Twin Peaks, and you're like, oh.
Man, the influence of this album, I think, is also seen in other, when we think about great breakup records like indie rock. As I was listening to it for this podcast and thinking about it very intentionally, I think that just kept hitting me. I was like, oh, this parallels so well with the Good Life record Blackout. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but there's like a two album thing from Tim Kashner, which is like Curse of Domestica is about his divorce, which is a phenomenal record. And then the Good Life, his side project, does Blackout, which is the year after his divorce. And it's about indulging in the worst of his behaviors, you know? And the entire time I'm listening to the lyrics of this album, like, oh, this is very much in that same vein. And so I think it has just been a benchmark for anybody that wants to write a brutal breakup, dive headfirst into the darkness of sexuality and loneliness and, you know, and all the ugly parts of us. I mean, it's just,
I mean, after brilliant. Pulps, this is hardcore. Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned a lot about Greg Dooley this week, 100% more than I knew prior to this week. And it sounds like before he got into music, he was interested in like acting and also filmmaking. And Matt, you mentioned that Gentleman, the theme of Gentleman is a bit based on the Coppola movie,
One from the Heart.
Yeah. And I can see him taking like the thematic storytelling of like filmmaking and kind of channeling that into this audio record. I feel these characters and I see these characters, and I thought it was really interesting that where he's coming from as an artist. And he was saying like the romantic lead of One from the Heart, Hank, the dude's such a heel. I haven't seen the film, but he said he's such a heel, but he doesn't want to be a heel.
Right.
And he said, and that's kind of like what he was getting into, like the darker side of the male psyche, being a piece of shit, but not wanting to be a piece of shit. Where do we go from there? You know?
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. For sure.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that movie, too, because you brought up Tom Waits before, because that's a Tom Waits vehicle.
He's in the movie. Yeah, yep. He's in the movie. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of being in movies, Greg Dooley's voice is the singing voice of John Lennon in the 90s Beatles movie Backbeat.
Really?
It looks like the artist that they put together to be the... But the artist that they put together to be the recorded version of the Beatles, and this is like, it's like pre-Please Please Me, it's like Hamburg Club Beatles. Not playing Beatles songs, playing like old blues songs and country songs and stuff. But the lineup for this Beatles group, it's all like... 90s alt rock heroes.
Yes.
like Thurston Moore on guitar. I don't have it in front of me, but every name on there is like, oh wow, interesting.
Yeah, Gavin Rosdale is John Lennon.
We already said Greg Dooley is John Lennon.
David Grohl plays drums. Mike Mills from REM plays other guitar. David Priner from Soul Asylum. You mentioned Thurston Moore. Yeah,
David Priner's the Paul McCartney voice, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So. David Yao plays Pete Best. Pete, you can't be pulling your nuts out all the time.
I just love that Ringo is Dave Grohl.
And, you know, I would love to see Dave Grohl in a Ringo haircut.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, wasn't he in that video?
He's in the documentary about Ringo Starr or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think he did the haircut for it.
Yeah. You were mentioning
the walrus was power.
You were mentioning the sort of, you know, themes of this and it being like a movie, but they called it a song cycle and kind of referenced the Van Morrison, you know, 1968 album Astral Weeks, with the reoccurring, and this is what I'm getting out of a song cycle. It's a reoccurring melodic motifs and lyrical imagery throughout. So when they bring back lyrics, when they bring back, you know, certain, you know, like melodies and things like that, I guess is considered a song cycle instead of being a concept album or
like Astral Weeks.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see it in this one because lyrically it comes back around a couple of times. The idea of it don't bleed and it don't breathe. It's locked its jaws and it's swallowing.
Yeah.
That line plays in a couple of the songs. And he brings back a couple of other things. There's a couple of other like lines that make appearances throughout the song, throughout the album. Sorry.
Linda Ronstadt hated this album cover.
Okay. Yeah.
She was a label mate. I guess she was on Elektra at the time. She hated it. She said it was one naked belly button away from being child porn.
Wow.
Wait, so she thinks belly buttons are child porn?
She thinks that belly buttons are child porn, yes. She thinks that all you need for child porn is a belly button.
Interesting. I will say that the Nangold photograph it's based on is better. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. It just is.
Well, by the laws of diminishing returns, then my album cover is dog shit. So,
this was recorded in Ardent Studios in Memphis, which is also where Ardent recording artist Big Star recorded. I just wanted to say that.
Good. Yeah.
God bless Big Star.
It also featured, who was it from Big Star?
Jody Stevens.
Yes. Thank
is
you.
Backing vocals on Now You Know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ben.
Something we've not talked about yet is just how out of the blue and how absolutely perfect Marcy Mays is, her vocals, yes, on My Curse. And she's the whole song. It's not like, yeah, just like we bring her in a duet. No, they just hand over the song to her.
Thank you,
and,
Matt. Yeah.
Oh my God. Just an amazing, amazing performance by her.
Thank you. Yeah. I had never heard this record and I was listening to it and I was like, you know, one time I played a record in front of a woman who was like, this just sounds like a dude being like, I'm a dude. And I was like, I get what you're saying.
Was it an AC/DC record?
Yeah. This is Nick
I was
going to
say, was it a mustache record? It was
Papa Don't Leave You Henry. She was like, what is this about?
Like, why are you making me sit through this? Can't we just
Yeah. That performance is amazing and needed a little...
to balance it out,
you know, here's the other side of all of this, just for one song. It was incredible.
So I'm not familiar with the name Marcy Mays. Would I know her from anything other than this?
Only if you're cool. Question.
Yeah,
I'm obviously not cool.
Let's see. I always thought, and I think
I just know her from Scrawl, which is the, you know, her other band. I found it really fascinating though that he originally was going to do the song himself and he was going to tackle it, and then he just said, I don't have it in me to make this song work, essentially.
That's so awesome.
He just was like, I can't do it, you know, this song is just I don't want to do it. So yeah, you're right, he handed
it
over.
So forward thinking for 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well,
you can hear that it's definitely the song. It's definitely still written in his voice. Like it's still like you could. It's very much a Greg Dooley vocal line.
Yeah.
But the fact that he knew he couldn't bring it the sort of emotional range to it, because he's good at like kind of like the, you know, like right now, what's happening right now. Like he can get the grit and get like the sleazy anger kind of thing, but that vulnerability that is on display of My Curse is like it's perfect. It's perfect that he realized that he needed somebody to come in and do it. I did just pull up a little bit of history about Scrawl. They were out of Columbus, Ohio. So a fellow Ohio band, because we've not talked about how the Afghan Whigs, one of the greatest bands ever to come out of the state of Ohio, a state that is rich with
rich with
bands.
Good bands.
Yeah. Listen to this.
Devo, Brainiac. Yeah.
Yeah. Ohio Players, on and on. Guided by Voices. There's so many like to keep going. So yeah, they formed in 1985, originally under the name Skull. So their first show in the summer of 1985 was a 20-minute opening spot for the Meat Puppets. Your first show out and you getting to open for the Meat Puppets in 85. That's
awesome.
Hot. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. So they put out some records on local label No Other Records and then signed to the ill-fated Rough Trade Records US, who they released two records for, which that label, of course, filed for bankruptcy in the 90s. And then they wound up working with Steve Albini eventually. And so, yeah. And they released on the Simple Machines label, so which is the Tsunami label.
Looks like after that, they got signed to Elektra, which is Afghan Whigs label.
Yeah, so there you go.
I want to hear the lines that stick with you, Matt.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I think that one motif that comes through over and over again, it's even in the opening track, which almost sets the I don't want to say it's like the thesis of it, but that idea of it don't bleed and it don't breathe, it's locked its jaws and it's swallowing, is just so evocative. And then like when it continues on, it's like it's in our heart, it's in our head, it's in our love, it's in our bed.
Yeah.
Just like that. I mean, oh my God, it's just.
What about an angel come closer so the stink of your lies?
Yeah.
Sinks into my memory.
Yeah. Well, and then even this one, like what jail is like, you know, is talking about you'll cling, you know, if you want to scare me, you'll cling to me no matter what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was swinging
to the soul,
swinging for the fences on this, as far as like how, and think about that too, of like being comfortable enough to be the person who sings this dark ass shit, you know.
Yeah,
as
your
a
mom's
man,
gonna hear this,
and you're gonna get and more importantly, Mrs. Beach is gonna hear this, you know, and that's what I think everybody needs to be worried about. No, it's just it's one of those things where being okay with being the villain for an entire album, is impressive. And you know, and it also has sort of followed him, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, ideas that he is this misogynist based on this album and on other songs that he's written later he kind of got painted as that. It's like, it's not just the art, it's actual for
is
real
he? Matt is
I don't know him personally, but I'm just saying that I think it's like, it's pretty amazing when someone goes all in.
I was fascinated too, to realize, you know, this week that there's a lot of soul and R&B sort of influences in the Afghan Whigs. I had never picked up on that before reading that this week. I don't know. I just had always kind of lumped them in with, you know, 90s bands, indie rock bands, whatever, the grunge and, you know, rock and roll or whatever. But it really comes across when you start to dig into some of the elements of it.
I think it's also a little bit more apparent in the next record after this one, which I believe is called 1965, if I'm not mistaken. That one has a lot more of like a soul kind of like it's a little bit more dancey, if, for lack of a better word. It's grooving. It has more of a groove to it on a lot of the songs. And then also in like Honky's Ladder and Black Love and Future Records as well, kind of like definitely
dabble
in it.
Did you say Honky's Ladder?
Honky's Ladder is like a track off the album Black Love. So
Honky's Ladder.
Honky's Ladder.
That's not by the String Cheese Incident, is it?
I'm sure they do a bluegrass cover of it. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they had covered what, Al Green's Beware, Elvis. Mm-hmm. They had True Love, Travels on a Gravel Road, and they chose Tyrone Davis, I Keep Coming Back, for Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. I just found that very fascinating, that the inspiration that went into, you know, the band, mm-hmm. that in what it became in this album.
Do you think it's because they are from Cincinnati, Ohio, which has a, you know, a strong history of that, of soul and funk music coming out of there, you know?
Yeah, that was, I mean, reading up on them, I'm sure you know more than I do, but they, it sounded like they originally started with, you know, doing a lot of those R&B covers. They were very into that music, and that was a big influence on them, as well as
Psychedelic things, Shack, Temptations.
Yeah. And Van Morrison, like I said before, you know, he kind of had that element, that little, he gravitated towards those sort of soul artists. But at the same time, Greg Dooley's voice and the what they're presenting has, it's a different.
It's Dark City, baby.
Yeah, it has the sort of like a jangle. It has the rock and roll guitars. They just happen to be able to kind of infuse it. So I found it really interesting that to have that combination and kind of what they were doing.
Well, I think also it's just the case where that's the sign of, like, I think great art, because instead of just mimicking it, they just took that influence and twisted it into something completely new, you know? Cause they also, you talked about how they came out at the same time as all the grunge bands. They are so unlike every other band at that time. Yeah. They've got loud guitars here and there, but man, you stack them up to any other band at the time that was coming out, that was a guitar driven band. None of them sound like the Afghan Whigs.
Yeah.
You know,
Does anybody know where the name comes from? I have never known.
Pretentious city.
Okay.
Solid guess.
Yeah.
No, I remember being in high school and seeing that fucking album in my friend's room, being like, the Afghan Whigs.
I remember seeing that band name as a kid and thinking, well, they must be alternative.
Oh, you don't need that extra H in Whigs, gross. What are you doing?
Well, if you're a political party, you do.
Are you guys Civil War cosplayers? What is this?
I'm
Afghan
trying to see if
Whigs with an H.
Does anything on here about their name? Well, it just says that Dooley's former band was called the Black Republicans, which is pretty great.
Well, the Indianapolis had the gay Black Republicans.
Yeah, the punk band. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Uh-oh. Maybe that's why they had to change the name, is they got sued by the Indianapolis band, maybe. The band got their name from a little-known biker gang of white Muslims who were objectors to the Vietnam War.
No, I'm good.
I cannot give a higher recommendation. I'm all thumbs up.
Okay. Yeah, I think I am too.
Yeah.
For a minute, I was like, am I going to put this on again? Then I was like, yeah, actually, you know, after listening to it a couple times, I was like, yeah.
No, this album's amazing.
I will.
Yeah.
I do think it is a... We like to kind of comment to say it's a slower burn. So I would say,
it's a slower burn.
It is for me.
Yeah.
It was a slow burn for me.
Was it
really?
You instantly just dove in?
Short.
Wow. Okay.
Right to the point songs.
This album took me like 3 or 4 listens to appreciate as much as I do right now, I think.
Yeah. I was fished in, bro.
Okay. Okay.
Listen to these jabronis.
Top 10, top 5.
I would say it's top 10 for me, for sure.
Michelangelo just burnt out.
All right, next time we'll be talking about Amy Mann, Whatever. All right, thanks, y'all.
Lunatic and cold.